Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. Shop our huge selection of concrete. From general purpose concrete to specialty sand and mortar mixes, we have what you need to get any job done right. View our entire selection online or in store today and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport Radio and me, Matt Beadle, with you for 30 more minutes on this not so sunny Friday evening in London, England, or should I say Londres, Inglaterra. For we shall now divert our attention to a place where the sun is indeed still shining. And I know that for a fact, actually, because I've just got back from there. That place being Barcelona, of course. This is the El Clasico fan show on Love Sport, a half hour La Liga loving, focusing on those old adversaries, Barcelona and Real Madrid. And it's at Barca where we shall begin, where normal service has resumed at the top of La Liga. That somewhat stuttering start to the campaign has seen the club now win 4-4 in all competitions. And following the 4-0 rout of Sevilla last Sunday, they now sit in second spot, just 2 points adrift of Madrid, who we will get onto very shortly, of course. But first, Barcelona. And I'm delighted to say we are joined by a man very much in the know, Dan Hilton of the Barcelona podcast. Dan, great to have you on as always, and nice to have a little mini break from the action for once.
Thanks, Matt. Well, you come and bring me on, and I get a little jealous here hearing that you've come back from Barcelona. Obviously, it's you can hear this from a lot of Kool-Aid. It winds up being their favorite city that they've ever been to. I personally went on my honeymoon, and it's not that I'm getting remarried. My wife and I are very happily married, but we always needed to come to try to find a new reason to return to Barcelona.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a wonderful visit, as it always is. I've got a good friend in Castelldefels, so we spent a bit of time out there and just observed the hills, of course, where all the stars reside. Apparently, Ronaldinho, very famous for living there, Messi, Suarez. So we had a little look, actually, by the train station just to see if we could do any of them doing some keepy-uppies, but no luck, unfortunately.
Yeah, sounds tremendous.
And of course, I did mention it's international break, and sometimes that gives us an opportunity to chat about things, I suppose, we wouldn't often get to discuss. Normally, we're so ensconced in the activities of first-team football, match days, week in, week out, Champions League, La Liga, so many games coming back and forth. Normally, a certain Brazilian, of course, is always mentioned for something or other. By the way, less than 3 months until the January window, so we can expect all of that, but we'll swiftly move on and quickly just recap the Sevilla clash last week. 4-0, a strange old game, really. 3 goals in 8 first-half minutes. Changes, of course, made from that defeat to Inter. Busquets, we know that Sergio Busquets and Antoine Griezmann were replaced by Ousmane Dembele and Arturo Vidal, of course, as early as the 53rd minute. Valverde brought those on against Inter, but stuck with them for Sevilla. An interesting clash.
Yeah, and I feel like every time I come on, I have to start with the disclaimer that even a match like Sevilla, where Barcelona have recently dominated Sevilla at the Camp Nou, I always feel like you have to extract things from this game. And you wonder what are themes that go from match to match and throughout a season, and what are just one-off things in that match, right? So my thinking after they scored 3 goals in an 8-minute stretch, which is a lot harder to do than I think people realize, for me there were 3 main points that to why Barcelona wound up defeating Sevilla in the way they did. In truth, that match could have been 2 or 3 nothing Sevilla if Luke de Jong, one of Sevilla's many new pickups this year, could have found the back of the net. But to me, when Barcelona did find that turnaround with all those 3 goals and then continued to be the team on the front foot in the second half, basically one of every 3 line on the field. We know that Ter Stegen is going to continue to be Ter Stegen this year, but Messi playing his first full 90 of the season, and in the second half he had even said that he's returning to fitness and he felt that he had found the game a little bit better, and clearly Barcelona a different side with Messi. I'm not breaking any news here, but in the midfield, you mentioned it, Busquets going to the bench for Arturo Vidal, and in this match, at least just in this match, again, this isn't, I don't want to create a broad idea that Vidal is better than Busquets or this and that. I think most would agree that Sergio Busquets is a more important player and he's a better player than Arturo Vidal still. But what Arturo Vidal does add at the moment next to Artur and De Jong, and allowing De Jong to be that, not the defensive midfielder that Sergio Busquets is, but against a team like Sevilla, when Messi has the ball and Barcelona are able to press, Vidal is, I guess, a more central piece alongside him, or not essential, but complementary. And then the last point there would be Nelson Semedo playing at the left-back position, partnering with Ousmane Dembele on the left side, has the match of his life. For my money, Nelson Semedo, that was the best performance that I had seen him in a Blaugrana shirt so far. So really an encouraging sign to see the makeshift left-back excel in the way he did. And I think all those factors wound up culminating in a pretty good victory against Sevilla heading into the international break.
No, absolutely. And the mention of Semedo there linking up with Ousmane Dembele, I think, was really influential in the clash. And it's the latter that we're going to move on to now, because the curious case of Ousmane Dembele, and certainly from where we look on, obviously he signed for the club in 2017. When Neymar moved on, he took his number. It was a big, big deal at the time, around 140 million euros. That's a big price tag for a very young player. It's been essentially stop-start since then. I think in terms of his starts for the club, 34 in La Liga, 12 goals, 11 assists. I know we can look a lot deeper into the stats in terms of dribble stats and passing stats and those kinds of things, but on the surface of it, it's been, I guess, slightly inconsistent. He finally gets his second start of the campaign. He looks to do well, and then there is that bizarre sending off, and we now know he's going to miss the El Clasico in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, the referee for that Sevilla match, I very rarely do speak about the referees, but La Hoz is a very famous referee in the Liga simply because of some of the, we'll say, more attention-grabbing matches that he winds up featuring in. And he's certainly a name that if you find him refereeing a game as a fan of Barcelona, it can be a frustrating sight. But back to Dembele, just worrying about him in a vacuum here. You did mention stats, and myself and my co-host Frances Tomas talked about this in length on our show, just how Dembele is the most polarizing figure that Barcelona has. And I think in support of Dembele, this is a pro-Dembele argument that I'm to make here, that you look at the times that he's dispossessed. I have the stats here right in front of me. Against Sevilla, he was dispossessed three times, to Messi's two. They both lost the ball in the middle of the field a few times, but in the attacking third for Sevilla. And now, he only had three dribbles to Messi's successful 10 dribbles, 84% passing success, 1% less, 85% for Messi. But even with those analytics, the frustration people have with Dembele is because of the good things that he can do, where he beats one defender seemingly every time he gets the ball, and potentially a second. But the problem is, because he doesn't release the ball on that third defender or that fourth defender, and because we can see, obviously, with the advantageous position he puts himself in, it makes it look that much worse when he loses the ball, because, again, we can clearly see the space that he himself has opened up, right? So it is really a chicken before the egg. Would you rather have a player that can create that opportunity and get to that spot but can't seem to find that final ball just yet in his career? Because, as you mentioned, it almost is a self-fulfilling prophecy every time with him, that he doesn't seem to have that continuity and consistency, whether it's injuries and now finally a red card. So for me, if Dembele was able to finally find a number of matches in a row, you expect that final ball is going to start to come. It just makes him one of the most electric players in the world, in my opinion.
It's a really interesting point you make, Dan, and thank you for those stats, by the way. I knew you'd come up trumps with those. I just said goals and assists. You went a lot deeper into it. But there's a few other, I guess, facets in terms of looking at this. One, I don't want to make comparisons, but part of me almost wants to compare him a bit to Paul Pogba, in the sense that Paul Pogba, Manchester United fans in particular, they want him to fulfil his potential so desperately. But it just feels like there is an air of carelessness around him, almost to the sense that you need to be arrogant as a footballer. You need to have a sense of arrogance, but you just feel like with Pogba that he almost believes he's better than he is, and to an extent underestimates those that he comes up against. With Dembele, sometimes I think that because he's got such ability, so much ability, that he almost takes it a bit for granted and just presumes that he can get into positions and play balls, and that ends up resulting in what appears to be slightly sloppy play. And I guess the other factor in this is Messi and Suarez. You know, he's been there for 2 years now, and we've seen with Antoine Griezmann already this season that it's not an easy duo to suddenly jump into and make a trio. You know, those two guys have played together for a long time. Dembele now, after 2 years, it appears might just be getting a grasp of how those two play.
Yeah, and that's where the pushback comes. That it's not the matter, again, that just like Busquets, that Barcelona were better with Dembele out as the winger, but he does add a width as a natural winger to Messi and Suarez, and that's what's required of that front three, that trident. But just the eye test, that Dembele did look better with Suarez and Messi than Griezmann did, and that goes very much to your point, that it does take some time to get used to the spaces that Messi creates. And it does take, and it's not just, he always says that it's a difficult thing to get used to Barcelona's system, and on top of that, a system that does always and will always quite reasonably revolve around obviously you're asking Akula here, but to the greatest player in the world, in my opinion, at the moment. But the other thing I would say, the only pushback on the Dembele point is the Catalan media, just like the British media to a point, they do pick players that they seem to not fancy too much, to put it lightly, and Dembele winds up being one of those players where I would say always take it very cautiously. Look at the place for which that story is coming, and take it with a grain of salt, depending on who has that report. Because I think some of the things about Dembele and his character and all the things you read and hear are greatly exaggerated. And sometimes it might be a respectable news source, but if they got it from a place that is less respectable, that winds up putting it in the news cycle anyway. And I think it could be a damaging thing to a player's career, and especially one so very young. Those are the easiest players to pick on as well.
Yep, couldn't agree more there, Dan. And there was an article this week, of course, as well, from his teammate Jean-Claire Todibo, who did say that Dembele is a serious boy. You know, he looks after himself, he controls what he eats, and he's always training after working out in the gym. We're going to move on quickly to Victor Valdes now, Dan, as well. This is arguably one of Barcelona's best ever goalkeepers, more than 500 appearances for the club. He has been sacked as the youth team boss. He came in to work with the youth setup. Frank Ortega has taken over. What has happened here?
Well, Matt, I have to do a little plugging here, too. This was the topic of, we have a YouTube channel as well called the Barcelona Podcast, so you can find us there as well. This was what this was about, this Victor Valdes news this week, and we also talked about it on the podcast. But it makes me wonder, and it brings up the question, that who do the fans trust to know what's best for the club, right? Is it the board members who we just see in suits? Is it coaches? Is it the players that we obviously can see? Some like to live or die for the badge, and others not so much. Or is it retired legends that did just that? Or is it the socios that even this week, not to go too far off topic, but the socios for Barcelona in Barcelona had that the vote where they needed 2/3 of the votes to vote for electronic voting, and they just didn't get the votes just underneath it. But nevertheless, Victor Valdes coming in, you expect that a legend like him, I mean, one of the greatest, along with Rami Yates and Zubizarreta and also, I think, Ter Stegen, Victor Valdes, one of the greatest goalkeepers that Barcelona has ever had. And yet it seemed like it was doomed from the start. You mentioned the disagreements. It seemed to be a personal disagreement with Patrick Kluivert and a member of the board. And then you just almost list a number of factors that went into it, some that you kind of have to squint your eyes at. And then the other things are clearly things that would be transgressions against a coach. And they say it all started with he playing a 4-4-2 instead of a 4-3-3, because one of the rules at La Masia is there has to be continuity. I mean, the first team does have a little bit of license to play to the personnel. So in Valverde's first year, we saw him play a 4-4-2. But if you're coaching one of the La Masia teams, as Victor Valdes did with the Juvenil A's, it has to be a 4-3-3. And then part of that, too, is that highly rated, it's not just Ansu Fati, but along with him, another 16-year-old, Iyash Moriba, who for Barcelona fans, and I think for the Liga fans in general, a name to know for sure, he's one of the top teenagers in the entire world at 16. Mm-hmm. And he was benched for a reason, and I think this is the most difficult argument to have, because I don't know if anybody's right in this situation. If reports are to believe, Moriba was benched, and then the player and his parents went to Kluivert, basically over Valdez's head, to complain about the playing time for a player that Barcelona, just like Fati, is heavily, heavily invested in. While other players that people might know from Instagram, like a Xavi Simon, he goes to PSG, and Barcelona didn't put the financial investment in him. Moriba's the one who they did put that. It just shows you the faith that they had in this player. That Valdes just didn't seem to like for some reason or another in a certain number of matches. But another different things where he was sent off for profanity, which is not something that becoming of a La Masia coach. There was a a UEFA sanction that was handed out after he was late to one of the home matches in the UEFA Youth League, where he didn't have a win yet. His very first, the O10 Cup in the Netherlands, he winds up, he didn't like the short rest period between the matches, so he pulls the team out. That's almost the very first thing he does during the preseason over the summer. And then also voicing his concern both about a potential Neymar transfer, which I think a lot of Kool-Aids agreed with, some didn't. But then he also winds up skipping a coach's meeting and complaining about the lack of games for the Juvenil A at the new Estadio Johan Cruyff. So it just winds up being a ton of disagreements. And we always knew that he did have a little bit of a, he has been a firebrand in the past. You saw that with him his whole time at Barcelona. And even the way he left, that didn't necessarily work. He winds up being injured for his final game at the Camp Nou. And I always think about that image about Iniesta sitting on the field and how emotional that day was. And you look at Valdez, who was arguably as important as a player in that dynastic team, and yet the way he left was unceremonious.
Dan, that is as conclusive as I think it could be. Thank you very much for that. Sadly, we're going to have to wrap it up, but we'll be back next week ahead of that clash with Ibar. Dan Hilton of the Barcelona podcast, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Matt.
That was Dan Hilton, and this is the El Clasico Fan Show on Love Sport. Next up, Real Madrid.
Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. Shop our huge selection of concrete. From general purpose concrete to specialty sand and mortar mixes, we have what you need to get any job done right. View our entire selection online or in store today and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
This is indeed Love Sport. I'm me, Matt Beadle, with you for another 17 minutes or so. No, that's incorrect. 13 minutes or so. I should really get my maths sorted. This is the El Clasico Fan Show. Now on to Real Madrid. It is business as usual, of course, at the top of La Liga. Unbeaten in 8 games thus far. 4 Los Blancos lead the table. 2 points ahead of Barcelona. Just 2 weeks away, of course, from that El Clasico clash on October 26. Really, really cannot wait for that one. And it will be a slightly new look, El Clasico, as well, when you consider the various personnel tweaks at each club since the start of the campaign. Certainly more so in Barcelona's case, but with Eden Hazard off the mark in last week's victory over Granada and Fede Valverde sizzling in the centre of that midfield for Madrid, we can look forward to welcoming some new challenges when those two teams meet at the new camp, as I say, in a couple of weeks' time. But before that, of course, it's an international break followed by a trip to Mallorca next week, where one man in particular might have a chance to fully get back in the groove in a Real Madrid shirt. We're going to get to that in a moment or two after I introduce our special guest, Mr. Matt Wiltsey from Managing Madrid. Great to have you on as ever, Matt.
Hey, Matt. Good to be on.
Lovely to hear those dulcet American tones, of course. Now, a 4-2 triumph last Saturday over Granada. Looked to be cruising and then a slight scare, I suppose, as the visitors pulled a couple back. But it was a certain James Rodriguez who made sure of the result right at the death. Now, this is a guy back after a 2-year loan at Bayern Munich, many of whom thought at the time would be the precursor, I guess, to a permanent deal in Germany, himself included in that as well. It didn't work out. He's back at the Bernabeu and, dare we say it, back to his best?
Yeah, I mean, if you told Madrid fans just even 2 weeks before the season started that James Rodriguez would be starting matches, and not only starting matches, but starting big matches and scoring goals again and providing assists, 99.9% of those Madrid fans would not have believed you. And then on top of that, I mean, they just would have been shocked. And so to see James back in a Madrid shirt, to see him scoring goals, I mean, it's incredible. And you can see, you saw it in the last game against Granada. I mean, he just has this affection for the Bernabeu crowd, and the Bernabeu crowd has an affection for him. And so it's so good to see him playing for Madrid again. And he's playing well. If you've taken note of the Spanish press, I mean, all reports indicate that he's just had the right attitude. He's gone about it the right way. And so Zidane himself has done a U-turn on James, and it looks like he will have a big part to play this season.
Yeah, tracking back, I believe, is what they're saying as well. You know, even chipping in defensively, which is a part of his game, I suppose. we didn't see so much. And you're right, I think he just seems like a nice bloke. I know that's not really a football analysis, but James really seems like a, you know, a close family man. He's, you know, he's very family oriented from Colombia. And of course, 12 players away on international duty at the moment, of which he is not one. Now, there's varying reports here. Some people are looking at this and saying, you know, he's really committed to the Madrid cause by not going away on international duty for Colombia. Colombia boss Carlos Queiroz, of course, an ex-Real Madrid boss, has said no, didn't call him, wanted him to stay where he was and try and get fit. Either way, ahead of this clash with Mallorca, it can only be a good thing that he's got this rest.
Exactly, yeah. No, either way, it's just going to bode him well. He's going to be, hopefully, apparently get a couple knocks heading into the Granada match, but hopefully he'll be 100% recovered by the time Mallorca comes to the table. And we need him. I mean, that Madrid midfield depth this year isn't quite as strong as it once was. And so James is an integral part of the team now. So especially with his end product. And like you said, he's now working hard, working both ways on the field. There's no luxury position anymore in football. And so to see James working both ways on the ball is just, it's huge for us.
Yeah, it's great to see. And there really has been a tough run of games throughout September and now October, of course. Toni Kroos injured, as things stand. Isco is on his way back from injury, but those others that are going to be recovering from international duty as well. So he's really got an opportunity now because, you know, Real face Mallorca, then there's Galatasaray to try and get that first win in the Champions League off the mark. And then, of course, it's El Clasico. So that two-year loan potentially could be a thing of the past. And speaking of two-year loans, of course, a certain Martin Odegaard, La Liga's Player of the Month for September. Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, and so Odegaard is, first off, he's a player I love. And over at Managing Madrid, myself and Kian Sabani, who's our chief editor, we've been tracking this kid since he first came to Madrid and tracking all his different loan spells. And even last year at Vitesse, he was just simply incredible. If you watch his games, I mean, he's just so, it's so fun to watch him. The way he plays football is just incredible. He's got a wand of a left foot, and he's just a fun player. And his form just translated right over to La Liga. He was like a duck to water. I mean, there was no drop off. He's immediately become Real Sociedad's best player. Him and Oyarzabal are their best players. And he's 20 years old. I mean, it's so easy to forget that he's still just 20 years old. And so he has been adamant that it will be two-year loan, despite him playing so well and despite many Madrid fans already clamoring to have him back now. But he's adamant about developing there for 2 years. And so once he comes back, I'm sure he's going to set the Madrid midfield alight.
It's intriguing to see how this one's going to work out, Matt, because like you said, it is a two-year loan at Sociedad. He's, again, adamant, like you say, that he wants to stick that out. But, you know, if it gets to the point, and we could be talking injuries, we could be talking players departing, but if it gets to the point where there's what would appear to be a massive Martin Odegaard-shaped hole at Madrid, you can imagine Zidane going, look, lad, come back. You know, we want you to come back. And you mentioned the fact that he's taken to La Liga like a duck to water. It's so pleasant to see that because we know he had spells in Germany and Holland. They were okay. He didn't pull up any trees particularly. But to see him play in La Liga to the level that he is must massively excite Madrid fans.
It does. And I mean, let's be honest, if Odegaard continues this form through the rest of the season, which, having watched him for however many years that I have, the one thing you can note about Odegaard is his consistency. And that's rare, especially among kind of central attacking midfield players. So let's say he finishes as a La Liga Player of the Year or a Liga Team of the Year, whatever it may be. I mean, he may be too good for Madrid to say, hey, Martin, you're going to have to come back. I mean, you don't worry about playing time. You're going to be an out-and-out starter for us. And I think that's his only concern, honestly. His dream, he's reiterated it time and time again. His dream is to play for Real Madrid, and that's what he wants to do, and that's what he wants to accomplish. If his dream gets accelerated and it's not necessarily on his initial timeline, I don't think he's going to have any problem with that.
No, absolutely. And a player whose dream it is to play for Madrid, to a player whose dream it perhaps no longer is to play for Real Madrid, is Dani Ceballos. Now, I don't know whether this is fueled by the media. Often you kind of think it is when you get Ceballos talking about Madrid, but he's away on international duty at the moment. And he has been asked the question as to whether he misses Real Madrid. Of course, on loan with Arsenal in the Premier League at the moment is Dani Ceballos. And he's basically said, no, I don't feel sorry for not being there. You know, I wanted to leave. It's quite clear that he doesn't have that relationship with Zidane. And, you know, he was put, that question was put to him, you know, what would it take for you to come back? What do you think of Zidane? And, you know, he said, yeah, he won three Champions Leagues, but I can't tell you what will happen. It seems like his heart is pretty much set on a move to the Premier League. What do you think?
So those quotes caused a lot of uproar in Spain, especially in Madrid and with Madridistas. So, yeah, no, I mean, he made his, from my point of view, Ceballos could have taken, I mean, obviously the Spanish media was trying to get a quote like that, a reaction like that, but he could have been kind of very diplomatic, conservative, given the, you know, the usual political answer. But instead, he was very blunt and he was very honest. And I think that was telling. And I think he was trying to maybe position himself for a permanent move. I think he's gotten to Arsenal and realized, hey, I enjoy playing. I enjoy being a prominent member. Arsenal is not that different from Real Madrid. He said that before. And I guess he's really enjoying life in London and enjoys the club. And so maybe he's trying to position himself for a permanent move. It's interesting because if you recall, and back in the summer, he actually, according to reports, he was the one that pushed for just a one-year loan move. He did not want a permanent move because it was his intention to succeed at Madrid. But with Zidane there, I just don't know, because the tension and the that relationship is not strong, like you mentioned. And you could ultimately do a U-turn like like Zidane has with Gareth Bale and James Rodriguez. But right now, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, it's the lure of not so sunny Blighty, Matt. That's what's done it. He loves being in England, loves being in the capital. Just quickly before you go, we've got about a minute. Eden Hazard, I know we've spoken about him a lot on this show. Everyone's always talking about Eden Hazard when it comes to Real Madrid, but finally off the mark in that clash with Granada. He's only played four times for Real this season. It's not been an electric start to life at the Bernabeu. There's been talks of him being overweight, unfit, and, you know, there's been quotes from Arsene Wenger today who said that he's not going to score 50 goals per year. That's not the way he plays. He's not the answer to replace Ronaldo. What are you making of these quotes from Wenger? And do you think that's true, that he's not the answer to replace Ronaldo?
He's obviously a different profile to Ronaldo. So he's not going to replace Ronaldo's 50 goals. He'll probably bring, we know, Hazard's going to bring 20 goals, maybe 15 assists. And that production Real Madrid definitely needs. I mean, they've lacked that. And hopefully the goals, Ronaldo's goals, will come from other departments. Obviously, Benzema's already stepped up. We need more from Bale. We need more from midfield. That's where guys like James come in, who do have that end production. If you can make up the goals in various departments, then you don't need Hazard to be an exact like-for-like replacement for Ronaldo. You're never going to get that. Ronaldo's a unicorn. He's a once-in-a-lifetime player. But with Hazard, obviously getting that first goal, that's going to make all the difference. I think the weight's kind of lifted off his shoulders, and he'll be able to play a little bit more freely now, and hopefully this starts to we start to see his end production really come to fruition.
Yep, absolutely. A unicorn. Never heard Ronaldo be referred to as a unicorn before, Matt. I like that.
That's one we use at Managing Madrid quite often. Ronaldo and Messi are certainly unicorns.
Lovely stuff. Matt Wilsey from Managing Madrid, thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
That was Matt Wilsey from Managing Madrid. Of course, it is the international break, but Madrid go to Mallorca next Saturday. They then face Galatasaray away from home. Welcome to hell. We know what happened last time Manchester United, well, the first time Manchester United went there. A very, very difficult place to go. And then it is El Clasico at the Nou Camp, Saturday, 26th of October. We'll be starting our preview for that game next week on Love Sport. We will see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. Shop our huge selection of concrete, from general purpose concrete to specialty sand and mortar mixes, we have what you need to get any job done right. View our entire selection online or in-store today and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards. Save big on everything for your next outdoor project when you shop at Menards. Greenworks 40-volt cordless tools have everything you need to keep your yard looking great. The Greenworks cordless trimmer and edger is lightweight, starts instantly, and comes with a 40-volt battery and charger. Pick one up today, on sale, now through June 1st. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.